Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, we're in chapter 6, and the challenge here has been Elisha is an amazing prophet. Like he does double the miracles of Eliyahu, and each one is unique and different. And you could have different skeptics, you know, the things that people don't believe or they don't see. And here, these things are happening openly. This previous thing where these soldiers came to get Elisha and he blinded them. And they let them go. You would have thought that by now the king of Israel would understand that what was right and what was wrong, you know, and who the leaders were. We're going to see that his name is Yoram. He's the king of the 10 tribes. He was like his father, that he saw a little bit. In other words, he came around a little bit, but not enough. And that's really the challenge. Like, we like everything to be black and white. You know, we like our villains to be really evil and our righteous people to be really righteous. And the reality of it is that in life there's a lot of gray. There are people that do good and bad. And here you had a king whose his mother was Ezebel, Jezebel. And he came after a lot of bad, you know, really bad kings. And he did some things that were positive. But on the other hand, he should have gone all the way. He should have fixed things there. At this point, he should not have had doubts about who Hashem was and about who the prophets were. And the enemies of the Jewish people were trying to kill him, and the prophet came to him and said, "Hey, don't travel this way. There's a secret. The enemies are waiting to ambush you." So you would think that he would say to himself, "Wow, you know, this prophet cares about my life. He cares about me. I want to know more about this. I want to find out what." But somehow they weren't fazed by the miracles. And there are a lot of people in life that they say, "Well, God never came to me with a sign. He never made me a miracle. If only he gave me the miracle, then I would believe, then I wouldn't question, then I would lead a different kind of life." And historically, that's not true. In other words, there were people that had miracles happen in front of their eyes, and it didn't change them. It really doesn't work. In other words, why doesn't God just, wouldn't that solve all the problems if, like, you know, around a person's bar or bas mitzvah, God came to him and said, "I'm here, I want you to do everything it says in the Torah, and be a good boy, a good girl, and everything, and if you don't believe me, here's the fire, and here's the magic," and then everybody would just lead the perfect life. It's not true. People see miracles. And these people saw miracles, and they didn't deny that they saw miracles, and they just went back to life as usual. That's just the human nature is such that a person is influenced for a few days, a few weeks, and then they do what they want to do.
What have you done for me lately?
Yes. And we see that on our level, because there are sometimes that we prove a point to someone, or somebody comes around to a certain idea, and you say, "Great, now they understand." Mm-hmm. And maybe they really do, but 6 months from now, forget it. It's just, unfortunately, we tend to, human nature is such that we just go back to a certain natural way of behavior, that if we don't put in effort, changes are only temporary, and we just go back to our habits. If we just, even if it looks like we see the light, maybe that's one day, and that's what happened here. But we have to look at that, because many people in their minds, they tell themselves, "If only I had that miracle, if only God would speak to me, if only I had that sign, then everything would be different." It's really the way the world is designed, that we don't have these private miracles, and it really wouldn't change. We live in a world where there is good and bad, and we have to make the best of it. We have to make the right decisions, and we can't make excuses. "Well, God never came to me, and how do I know?" And, you know, it's a person has to motivate themselves. But anyway, the prophet tried, and the kingdom slid back and forth. Now, one of the ways in which Hashem wants us to be reminded that we need to make changes was to bring an enemy upon us. This has always been the pretty much the program in Tanakh, when if there would be an enemy that would come upon us, then we would say, hey, maybe we need to change things. Maybe we need to do something. So that's what we're in chapter 6, verse 24. Vahi achrei kein, and it was after this. Vayikvitz ben Adad melech Aram es kol machanehu, and the king Adad, the king of Aram, he gathered his whole camp, v'yal v'yitzral Shomron, and he besieged the capital city of Shomron. 25. Vahi rav gadol b'Shomron, and there was a big famine there. V'nei sorim aleha adayos, and the famine was really bad. And if you want to know how bad it is, the rosh chamor, the head of a donkey, went for shmonim kesef, 80 silver coins, a Rebbe Hakav Chironim, and a little bit of dove dung, mm-hmm. went for 5 kesef. Now, most of you would know that the head of an animal has very little meat on it. Mm-hmm. We don't really typically eat the head. I mean, maybe they make soup out of it in some places, but and a donkey does not taste that good. Even Gentiles, even though they you know, donkeys, they're allowed to eat non-kosher, you're not going to find donkey stew. It's just not, doesn't taste that good. It's just not a good-tasting animal. Yet, food was so scarce. Now, when a person is starving, they're allowed to eat even non-kosher. It was well known during the Holocaust that people ate, you know, horse meat or whatever, any food they had just to stay alive. So even though this was a Jewish city, they had used up all the kosher sources of food. They had used up all the regular sources of food, and even a donkey's head went for 80 silver coins, which was a fortune. Now the question was, what did they do with the pigeon dung? It doesn't seem like it's edible. So most of the Mefarshim learned that they didn't even have fuel, because when you make a siege around the city, so you don't have access to farmland or the wood. Mm-hmm. And in the city, most of the houses were built of stone, so they had no fuel to burn things with. So apparently the pigeon dung was the fuel. Mm-hmm. Other people learned that they could pick, you could pick out little pieces of grains out of the dung. But you got to be really desperate if you're buying dung, if you're paying, you know, silver coins for dung in order to see maybe inside the dung is a drop of food. That's how scarce the food was. So it was really bad. And like the people had the history just a few years, you know, it wasn't that much in the previous generation, when in the times of Eliyahu HaNavi, and it says in the Torah very clearly that when you worship the strange gods, that I'll bring a famine on the land. So the people should have known, that there should have been some clarity that if things weren't right, that's why there was a famine. But apparently they hadn't changed. And the politicians, they usually represent the will of the people. If the people were clamoring for change, then the politicians would, and that also hasn't changed. In other words, the politicians, they see what the people want, and then at least they say what the people say. So we find over here that the king, Yoram, was being stubborn, and evidently he felt supported that way by the people. Verse 26. Now, there are some stories here. Over time, we don't always know all the details. The Tanakh doesn't always tell us all the details of the stories, and they're not always recorded. So we have a few details, and we could try to figure it out. But putting it in our terms, there are a lot of things that we don't know, really, from the story. Behia Melech Yisrael over Alachoma, and the king of Israel was passing over the wall. They used to do lookouts on the wall. In fact, if you've ever been in the old city, if you ever take the tour, you can walk up by the wall and look at it. It's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Kind of like to, you know, walk up the... So the king of Israel was passing on the wall of Ishitzaka Elav Lemor. And a woman cried out to him, saying, Hoshia Adoni HaMelech, save me, my master the king. In other words, look to government. You know, you can help. So, Yomar, verse 27. And he says, Al Yashiach Hashem. Now, it's very interesting, because he sounds very frum, very religious, this son of Jezebel. But he says, if God won't save you, Ma'ayin Oshiacha. Government can't do it. If God isn't going to help you, then who's going to help you? In other words, Hashem is angry with us, and there's nothing I can do. I know the problems. I know that there's a famine. I know, but we're limited. If Hashem isn't going to save us, Me'eino Shiacha, who's going to save us? Hamina Gorin, Hamina Yekiv. Do we have access to farms? So he understood that the woman was asking for food, and he was basically saying, we have no food. That's the only God can help. Verse 28. There is it's possible that Yoram was, there are people that instead of saying it in a positive way, they kind of get angry at God. You know, like, why doesn't God help? Like, God doesn't want to help. Instead of saying it that, when he said only Hashem could help, they almost, we're going to see, like, instead of being aware that he was causing Hashem not to make it rain or not to take off the siege, he was blaming it on Hashem. But you could take it either way. 28. V'yomer lo ha-melech malach. So the king said, what's the problem? V'tomer isha azos ameilai. So basically what she says is that she wants justice. What was the situation? She had a fight with her neighbor. The neighbor said, Tanias b'neich v'nochano hayom, you give me your son and we'll eat him today. V'esbeni nochal machar, and my son will eat tomorrow. 29. V'vashos b'ni, and we'll cook my son, and okay, we'll eat it. And then the next day came, and it was my neighbor's turn to share her son with me. The tachvis, and she hit her son. So this sounds like cannibalism on a simple level, if it really did happen. There's no historical record that there was. Obviously, such a thing would be hard. Some people are not that they were going to kill the children, but that the children were dead. They had died, and the question was to eat the dead children. And one of them was being selfish. They didn't keep their part of the agreement. The Torah does say there's a section of the Torah called the rebuke of the Tochacha, that things would get so bad that people would be cannibals, that they would eat. And it could be that it referred to times like this. Usually when it tells us a story, we want to know why would Hashem do this to us? And this is a famous rule that we always find. Hashem gets angry with us when we don't treat each other right. That's always the rule, like when he brings the flood, right? He brings the flood, why? Because the people were stealing from each other. There was chama, or when the city of Sodom, because they weren't charitable towards one another, or the... It's one thing, like Hashem almost can forgive if people don't do what they're supposed to religiously, but if they can't even be good neighbors, if they can't be decent human beings, so that brings like a destruction. So over here... again, we don't know were the children alive, were they dead, were they doing this, were they doing that. In the Holocaust, what happened was they would send children over the wall of the ghetto to try to find food in the city, and the children were risking their lives because if they were caught, many times they were shot. And they kept the ghetto alive during the Warsaw Ghetto and others during the time where the Germans were surrounding them. But the people were endangering their children. Many times the children didn't come back. And sometimes what they would do is one would say, all right, my son will go out today to bring back food and your son will go back tomorrow. And it wasn't, you know, figuratively eating the child alive, but they were taking risks with the lives of their children. But over here... one person took advantage of another person's child, and then when it came their turn, they were unwilling to do that. The king apparently was out of touch. He apparently had no idea. Now, it's a small city. He was the king in Samaria, and these people were residents, and the people apparently had reached a point where they were eating their own children, and he didn't know. But to his credit, once he knew, he tore his clothing. He was up there on the wall. Now the interesting thing is, when he tore his royal robes, they noticed that he was wearing sackcloth underneath. By which, usually that's a sign of wanting to do teshuva, or a sign that he's mourning. So he did the right things, like he made the right signs, this king. Like I almost want to, you know, you want to like him. You want to say, like, it shows that he cares a little bit. Like, you could try to judge him favorably. But it's almost when a person knows enough to do certain things, he needs to go all the way. Or you could say that some people, this was an external thing to him. You know, he puts the sackcloth on. A lot of people do that in Yom Kippur. They do all, you know, they fast and they do this. And then the next day they're back to business as usual, right? In other words, they go through the outer motions, but they don't change. And so he's wearing the sackcloth. Now, what's his reaction? He doesn't say, you know what, let's call a teshuva meeting. Let's become better people. Let's return to Hashem. What is his message? Let's kill the rabbi. That's what he says. That's basically, it's his fault. He says, I'm going to kill the rabbi. It's all his fault. I'm going to get the prophet. That's basically what he says at this point. Again, our challenge in life is always to look beyond the messenger, always to look at the deeper meaning of something. You know, he's looking at the prophet who said, you know, there's going to be a famine because you don't do the will of Hashem. And so instead of saying, you know, maybe I should try to see, you know, what I can do that will make Hashem happy with our deeds, he says, well, I'm going to get that messenger. How dare he tell me that, you know? And so, verse 32. Now, what was Elisha doing? Elisha Yoshev Veso. Elisha is sitting in his house. Vazakenim Yoshimito. And he's sitting there with the elders. The elders are the, we've always had this, you know, the people, the leaders of the people, the elders, the wise people, they were studying with the prophet. Vayishlach Ish Milfanav. So the king sent out an officer, an assassin, Veterem Yavu HaMalach, Elav. Now, he sent somebody to kill the prophet. That's how angry he was. Vahu Omar El Zakenim. Now, meanwhile, Elisha is perhaps he's teaching a class, or he's talking to the elders. And he's a prophet. A prophet knows what's happening. So he announces to the people, Harisim Kishalach, Ben Hamartzeh Chazeh. He said, you know, the king, at this point, he wasn't very fond of the king either. And the king's parents was Achav and Jezebel, the one, if you remember, they wanted the vineyard, they liked the property next door, so they conveniently had their next door neighbor killed in order that they could inherit the property. So his parents were murderers. So he said, he told the people with him, have you noticed that this son of a murderer has sent an officer, Lahasir Es Roshi, to kill me. So he said, Rokevo HaMalach Sagradaus, you know what, don't let him in the house. Apparently he didn't announce that he was sending somebody to murder the prophet. He sent somebody secretly who would come and would pull out a sword and ambush him. But you can't fool the prophet. So he told the elders that were with him, he said, oh, the son of a murderer, he's doing his tricks again. Just keep the door closed, don't let him in. And he said that the king himself is going to follow up afterwards, is going to be there. So it's interesting, like you could study the relationship between the prophet and the king, but you see that he's not very happy with this king. Even though the king had sackcloth, and the king somewhat is showing sympathy for the people, but he just doesn't get it. He just, you know, instead of saying, you know, maybe I'm doing something wrong, what does he do? I don't like the messenger? Well, I'm going to send somebody to kill the messenger. Verse 32, Odenim Bidabri Ima, he's still talking to the, Elisha was talking to the elders, Dinei Amalek Yored Elav. And they see this assassin or this messenger of the king coming. V'yami Nezos Hara Me'is Hashem. Now, over here, this verse is a little bit difficult to decipher about who said what. Now, apparently what happened is the king came along and he changed his mind. He didn't want to kill Elisha. And he realized that Elisha you couldn't kill anyways because Elisha didn't let the assassin in the door. And at that moment, it occurred to him, you know what? This is not going to solve the problem. I've got to deal with Hashem. I can no longer just get rid of the messenger. And so at this moment, the king has a moment of truth that comes to him. And apparently once the king realizes the truth, it's no longer necessary to have the famine anymore. It hits the breaking point. There's kind of two ways to look at this. We have an idea with the Mashiach that there's two ways the Mashiach could come. One way is that the civilization will turn over a new leaf and do away with war and do away with evil, and the great leaders will come and lead the world to a new era of righteousness, where people aren't evil, people will not flourish, and Hashem will send those leaders because we deserve it, because the society will have changed. Society will be a caring society, will care for others, and will so that's one way. Another way is things will be so bad that Hashem has to intervene and send somebody to save the day, because things are only getting worse. In other words, it's either all good or all bad. Those are two different views of when Hashem would decide. Meanwhile, we go back and forth, as you know, some generations. What's interesting, before World War I, the European society thought that there would be no more wars. And they thought that mankind had changed for the better. If you ever read about, you know, what they were saying at that time, they really thought that they were going to change, and things were going to be better, and things were going to be different, and mankind had learned, and we were so much better than, because Europe had been at war for 1,000 years. And then it turned out that the last century was one of the worst centuries as far as wars went. But mankind comes close sometimes. In other words, sometimes we really do reach a point where we think, hey, everybody's getting it, you know, maybe there's hope. So, over here, you could either learn this, that it was so bad that this king is just not getting it, and it's reached rock bottom. People are eating their kids. That's it. Enough's enough. Let's fix this problem. Or, and this is the way most people learn, the king finally got it. He hit a moment of truth. And so let's try this verse 33 a little slower. Odenu midaber imam. He was still speaking with, I guess, the elders. In other words, Elisha was speaking with the elders. Vine hamalach yored elav. And the messenger, the one, I guess, that had come to kill Elisha, says, now, again, it's not clear who said what. I would say, again, hamalach yored elav, the messenger had been there. Now, the one doing the talking here, apparently, is the king. Vayomer hine zo saram es Hashem. He said, you know what? This is coming from Hashem. Ma ochul Hashem od. What more can I hope from Hashem? Now, the king himself, many people learned that he now called back the messenger, you know, and realized that you can't defeat the prophet. There's no use. This is from Hashem. And from Hashem, I've misbehaved. I have no right to ask for anything else. So when he hits that moment of truth, now Elisha is told by Hashem, let's end the famine. That seems to be what happened here. But it's this verse is very confusing, because we don't know it doesn't say who does the talking. It's hard to imagine that the assassin is the one that does the talking. And we don't really know what happened to him. Like, we know that in the previous verse, Elisha is sitting there with the sages talking, and he says, oh, here comes the murderer, and he says his master's coming afterwards. And then, while he's speaking with them, the messenger comes, and apparently, they lock the door, and then we hear the king saying, you know what? This is from Hashem. We are being punished because we are doing wrong. What can we hope for? And apparently, that's enough. Verse 7, chapter 7, Yomar Elisha Shamu Devar Hashem. So Elisha says, "That's it. So again, it's a confusing verse, because it's hard to see from his words that things have really changed. But again, most people would say that he hit rock bottom and he had that moment. The only thing I would comment on is that there is an idea that there are certain moments in life where things become clear to a person. And at those moments, the person has the chance to change or to do something. And so, somehow, at this moment where, you know, at first after seeing these women that are turning into cannibals, and then after trying to murder the prophet and realizing that it's futile to go that way, he just comes to realization that this is all from Hashem. So it's like Elisha says, oh, you realize it comes from Hashem? Okay, now we can end the famine. Now things will change. Vayomer Elisha Shamu Devar Hashem. Listen to the words of Hashem. Ko'amar Hashem. This is what Hashem says. Ke'es mochos sa solus b'shekel. He said, tomorrow, you know, today, where you can't even buy a donkey head for less than 80 silver coins, and you can only buy pigeon dung, that's how little food there was. Tomorrow, food will be so cheap, for a penny, you could buy a whole thing of flour, and you could buy barley, b'shar shomron, and it'll be for sale right here in the gates of Shomron. In other words, that all of a sudden, food will be plentiful. Now, you have to be skeptical, because food has to come from somewhere. It has to grow. It takes a long time to happen. And, you know, if you have just imagine that their enemies were outside. They didn't think there was any chance in the world that their enemies would give them food, right? The enemies were trying to wipe them out. And but this is what the prophet announced. He said that tomorrow, and there is this idea also. There's a pasuk that says, Yeshuas Hashem Keherefayin. That the salvation of Hashem happens in the flicking of the eye, like a blink. And that is the idea that it just takes a second. Like, you know, sometimes a person, things can seem all wrong, and then just like that, you know, things take a turn for the better. Hashem sends the salvation at the last moment. So over here also, like he says to him, don't worry, tomorrow at this time there'll be plenty of food. Verse 2, V'yadash li shishalamel. Now, you know that there's always going to be somebody who's going to doubt it. There's always going to be someone who's going to say, no way, oh, who are you kidding here? Now, you have to understand, this person who's in the king's guard, you would think that he just saw a miracle, because they had sent the assassin forward, and Elisha knew all about it, so why is he so skeptical? But he's still skeptical. V'yadash li shishalamel. And this messenger that belonged to the king, Nishanau Yadav, and he supported the king as Ish Elokim. He said he answered the man of God, V'yomeinei Hashem also Rubus B'Shamayim. He says, oh, come on, your king, God is not strong enough to do that. You think God is going to make heavens in the sky? Hayi Hadavar Hazeh, it's impossible. Even God couldn't do that. V'yom HaNikaroi, and that's a terrible thing to say. Like, it's one thing if you want to challenge the prophet, but to just say that you don't believe Hashem is great enough to do to do something like that, that's a challenge. So Vayomar, and so the prophet says to him, Hanika roya be'inecha, he says, because of your attitude, guess what? You will see it, but you won't get to eat. Umasham lo socho. It doesn't pay to be a skeptic. It's a lesson, you know, when people, it's almost like people don't want something good to happen, then when the good things happen, they don't get to enjoy them. You know, it's like a person has to hope for the best. So, a miracle is going to happen, and it comes in a very funny way. It's sent by a very funny message. This is actually a Haftorah. It's read in Parshas Metzora. There's a Parsha in the Torah that talks about lepers. Verse 3. And Hashem the lepers were who were the lepers? That was Gehazi. That was Elisha's former administrator with his sons. Those were these four lepers. The lepers were kept outside the city. So there were four lepers outside the city. So the lepers were outside the city, and being that there was no food, they were probably starving. So they came to the conclusion, why should we wait? Why should we sit here and die? They would go over to the enemy camp. What do they have to lose? Verse 4. If we go into the city, we'll die there. If we stay here, we'll die here of starvation. Let's go to the camp of the enemy. If they leave us alive, we'll be alive. If they kill us, they kill. What do we have to lose? That's what the lepers were saying to themselves. Verse 5. So they woke up in the evening and they went. It could be they thought they would go quietly, because you never want to challenge army troops, you know, directly, like in a battle. They thought they would go quietly. Yavlad could say, they came to the camp. Vinei ein shamish. And it was quiet. The camp was empty. Verse 6. Badoni shmias machana aram. And Hashem had done a miracle over here. That the camp in Aram, as they were encamping, they heard noises. Kol recha v'kol sus. they heard the sound of chariots and horses, Kol Chayil Gadol. And the troops thought they heard an army coming. V'yomer ish el achiv, and each man said to each other, Hinei socha leinu melech Yisrael, smalchei achitim. It must be that the king of Israel hired foreign armies to come and attack us. V'smalchei Mitzrayim, lavo leinu. Yeah, they got the Egyptian army and the Chitim army. It's a very strange thing to think about. But somehow the soldiers, they heard a noise in the middle of the night, and they panicked. Verse 7, V'yakumu, and they got up, V'yanusu, and they start running away. V'yazmas oleim, and they left their tents, V'esuseim, and their horses, V'eschamoreim. Now usually people run away on their horses and on their donkeys. They were so terrified that they ran away without even getting in their cars, so to speak. They ran away on foot. And they ran for their lives, and they left all the everything in their tents and in their camp. They left it behind, so the camp was totally abandoned. Verse 8. Now the lepers, they come in the camp, and it's totally empty. So they come into one tent and they have a party. They eat, they drink, this fits with who we, if we remember, they were into money. If you remember, they were greedy kind of people. They were the ones that had taken the money from Naaman, the general. And what do they do over here? Everybody in the city is starving, and they're worried about their gold and silver. They're taking gold, they're taking silver, they're taking clothing. I mean, these guys are lepers. And they go and they hide it away. They put it in the bank, and they go back for more. And they go and they take... And it's almost like each one, they didn't trust the others. They each one took, verse 9, V'yomer ish el re'ehu, and then finally one man says to his fellow man, Lo kena nachnosim hayom. This is not a good thing, what we're doing today. Hayom is a yom, it's good news. You have good news, you have to share it with people. V'nachnu mechashkin, we're going to keep it, we're going to hide. Now, these were, in a certain way, were lepers. They had acted wrong. They had acted selfishly before. They had acted in their own interest. And in a certain way, they still are. They're just saying, well, you know what? We could get in trouble if we don't tell anyone. That's kind of what they're saying here. B'chakinu ador aboker matzanu avon. You know, they might punish us if they find out we didn't tell anybody. You know what? We should tell the king. So they went to the gate of the city of Yigidulahem, and they told him, Lamar, Banu el Machane Aram, we went to the camp of Aram, Vine in Shamish, nobody's around, it's empty. The Kol Adam, and you can't even hear a person. All you hear are Kim Sus Asur, the horses are tied, the Chamur Asur, and the donkeys are tied, the Olim, and the tents are up. And that's what Vayikra Ashur and Vegidu Beis HaMelech Pnima. And they sent that message to the guards on the gates, and they sent it to the king. Verse 12, the king woke up in the middle of the night. Wow, this was interesting news. He went to his servants. He said, Agidu na lechem es asher asu lanu aram. He says, you know, the king thought he was a smart cookie. He says, I know these Aramim. He said, this is a trap. Yadu, they know ki revi manakti. They know we're starving. That what they're doing, this is all a strategy. They're hiding in the fields. Lamor, ki yatsum in the ear, as soon as we come out from the city, banafishem chayim, they'll catch us alive. The Elir Novo, and then they'll get to come into the city. So the king was afraid. He says, now it's interesting, he's not humble. He says, I know everything, you know, trust me, I know they're planning a trap. Verse 12, Yanechem Avadis. So one of the servants said, now keep in mind, the prophet had told him that everything will be fine. He still refuses to believe. He still says, he knows, you know, just yesterday he had heard from the prophet that everything would be fine, and he believed the prophet, and he saw the miracle, yet a day later, all of a sudden, he's business as usual again. And one of his servants says, you know what, it's let's take five horses, Asher Nishuba, Hineka Kolamon Yisrael, Asher Nishuba, and you know, we're so starving from the famine, we're dying, so to speak, the way we are. What do we lose by going to sea? Like, things are so bad that we have to take a chance. Verse 14, now here it says they took two horses, and the officer had asked for five. The king wasn't willing to give five. he was willing to give two. So Vishe Kamelach Achrei Nachan Eram Leimur Lachuru, go out and see. Verse 15, Vielchach Reyem out of Yarden. So they traveled, they sent the horses out, they sent the scout out to see what was going on. Vine Kol Aderech Meleah Begun Mekalim, and all along the route there were clothing and vessels. Asher Shichu Aram, because they were running so quick that they slowly let go of all their booty. Vayeshu Amalachim, and they went back. The messengers went back and they told the king. Now it's interesting. It doesn't say the king gave the orders now to go out. Once the people heard, they didn't wait. They were starving. Verse 16, V'yetzu Am. The people, they didn't wait for the king. At this point, they could care less about this king, right? They went out, the V'yuzes Machaneh Aram, and they went into the camp. V'yisaso, and it was a party. It was amazing. It was wonderful. The people, they had food, they had clothing, they had this, they had that. And then the prices started falling because V'yisaso les b'shekel. All of a sudden, there was so much to feed an army. There was a huge amount of food. You know, they had a siege, so they had all of the army, all of the food that was outside the camp was brought in. So the price of food went down. You could buy a saw of flour for a shekel. Sashaim shoram b'shekel kidvar Hashem, exactly as the prophet had predicted. Verse 17, Amalek hifkid es the shlish asher nishan al yado. Now we get back to that officer, the skeptic, who was there. The lesson is, don't be a skeptic. That's really the lesson. But this officer, al hashar v'yemusu ha'am, and he gets trampled by the people that are so busy running in and out. And since he was trampled, he knew about what was happening to Yamus, but he kasher diber ish elokim, asher diber redes hamelech elav, and he died exactly as the prophet said. But he got to see that it was true that this food was available. Some people say that he tried to put a tax on the food or try to keep it so that the word of the prophet wouldn't come true. And that's what happened to him. Verse 18, just like the king had spoken to the king that you could buy the barley for a shekel, verse 19, and the person, the skeptic, had said, is Hashem going to make windows in the heavens? Is it possible? He said, you will see, but you won't get to eat. In other words, at some point, you know, we're living at the end of history. You know, our forefathers were saved by so many miracles, and Hashem has taken the Jewish people to this point. Throughout history, where we've been, went through so many wanderings and have had so many enemies, you know, and we still, still people will say, you know, how are we going to manage? You know, how's it going to be? It's not going to work. We've been there, we've done that. Hashem has proven to save us. So, at what point do you say it's impossible for Hashem, or that Hashem can't do it? And that's what this person is punished. Vahilo came, and it was exactly as the prophet said. Vimuso so ha'am asher b'shar, and this guy gets trampled. The people that were in the gate, v'yamus, and he died. So this is the again another one of the great miracles of Elisha. We don't know all the details of what happened, but again, it's the idea that when Hashem sends an enemy against us, or Chas V'Shalom, if it happens, we should turn to Hashem and see what He wants. What is maybe where there's something wrong, or maybe it's like, you know, the people are fighting with whatever little food they have, they're fighting over it, or they're skeptical, or they're biting it. Like, what do we see? Like, we have these two women that are fighting. We have the king trying to assassinate the rabbi. We have the skeptic in the army who says, oh, Hashem could never do it. Like, you have to take these as examples of what the people were like. It's a rotten bunch of people, you know. Like they're skeptics and they're fighting with each other, and so no wonder there's a famine, and that Hashem is trying to send them a message. And you got these lepers out there that don't want to share, and they want to keep the booty, and the people just need to turn to Hashem and see that He's the source of livelihood and of goodness, and if they follow in His ways, He won't have to make a famine. There are those that go to the prophets and study from Elisha, and then there are others that don't seem to pick up on that. But he does. This is one of the great miracles, and even the fact that the price changed so quickly, you know, that the price came down, and that you know, people were able to buy the food like that is an amazing thing.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.